Welcome to the A-Dub Club, a podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, technology, pop culture, the internet, and general nerdery. There are three things that are important to know. One, we occasionally use swear words, but try to stay in the range of PG-13, or at least the kind of R that cool parents are fine with. Two, we occasionally talk spoilers. In this episode, we discuss in great spoilery detail the film Ad Astra, so be warned. And finally, three, most importantly, the only Oscar that Brad Pitt has ever won was for Best Picture because he was a producer on the movie 12 Years a Slave. With that out of the way, welcome to the clubhouse. We have snacks. Welcome to the A-Dub Club. My name is Andrew Whipple.
I'm Alex Wade.
And it is getting dark now at 7 o'clock because it's starting to become fall. It's starting to become fall. How are you doing, Alex Wade, in this fall dreariness?
You know, my life is definitely winding down in the sense of like I'm really getting to work, you know, trying to dig my nails into my acting shit right now.
Nice.
New class just started up, so that's exciting.
That's fun. How long does this class go for?
This one is 5 months, and then there's like another 5 month one after that.
All right. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I have no plans that are enshrined in stone 5 months in advance. I guess I'm in my lease. So we're just taking every day as it comes here in the Whipple household. But we're not here to talk about what's happening in 5 months. We're here to talk about what's happening in the future, but near sci-fi future, in that we just saw a movie that I made Alex Wade watch. And so this week's question is, what did you think about the 2019 film Ad Astra?
Ad Astra was fantastic.
Yes.
I really enjoyed it. I have some minor complaints. Like, I felt like this movie actually came out 10 to 15 years ago. But it was really, really good. The emotional journey of Brad Pitt throughout the film, of like this kind of, I wouldn't qualify him as a loner, but as a very lonely person intentionally, to then be, you know, realize that that's a shitty way to live life. It was kind of a good message, and then told through space travel.
Oh, I'm so happy that you also liked it, because to peek behind the curtain, I just saw the movie this week because I was kind of interested in it, and like podcasters and film Twitter people had said that it was a good one. I was like, all right, fine, let's watch it.
Space,
cool. And then watch it, and then immediately upon getting out, texted Alex Wade that this is a movie that he would have to see because I figured it would be something that you would at least react strongly to, if not love. And then realized, yeah. Oh shit, we have no idea what we're going to do for our A-Dub Club this week. So let's see if we can get Wade to see it beforehand. But yes, I'm very relieved. We have not actually talked about the movie since Wade's watched it.
I've watched it too, by the way.
I'm very relieved that you liked it because I also fucking loved it. Probably my second favorite movie of the year so far after Midsommar.
Oh, damn.
I adored it thoroughly for reasons that we will get more into as we discuss it in more detail and eventually get to the spoilery part. But I think unanimous A-Dub Club recommendation as of right now that if you're the kind of person that listens to our bullshit, you're the kind of person who's probably going to like this movie. And you should go see it. Not the least of which, I think, because like it's a wholly original near future sci-fi movie. Also like an adult drama sci-fi movie that, you know, you don't get a ton of those all the time for as much as we have like big budget, high concept things that usually they're a superhero movie or a franchise, something like that. So I think if this is the kind of stuff that you're into, you should go see this movie. So that way you blah, 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 vote with your dollar, et cetera.
It was a very emotionally charged film, and Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Brad Pitt was so good.
Amazing. He usually for me comes off as from Fight Club. Like what's his character in there? Tyler Durden. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, kind of cocky and you know, off the hip, you know, fast talking, cool dude guy, right? But in this movie, he was just very reserved and within himself. Like, you could see the emotional turmoil that was, like, hidden in his depths.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Moneyball?
Yes.
You reminded me a lot. Yeah, reminded me a lot of his performance in Moneyball. I think this is probably a better move for me. This is probably a better movie than Moneyball, but Moneyball's performance, I thought I liked him a little bit more, or I thought it was a slightly better, but like they're both phenomenal. I was listening to a podcast I've been getting deep into the last couple months from The Ringer called The Big Picture. That's like a movie podcast, a movie and Oscars podcast. And this week they did talking about Ad Astra, interviewed James Gray, the director, and then also talked about like the two hosts' top five Brad Pitt performances. And it was interesting in listening to that, how much I don't think of Brad Pitt as one of my favorite actors, in part because it's like, oh yeah, he's a movie star, whatever, but he's good, but he's, you know, he's not the person that would like rise to the top of one of my like favorite actors of all time list. And then you walk through a lot of his performances, and at least for me, how much like, oh, he's incredibly fucking good beyond just being a movie star. All the way from Fight Club to Ocean's 11, I think he's amazing in Moneyball, Inglourious Bastards, this summer, the 1-2 punch of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then Ad Astra. That you're like, man, if anything, I've kind of been underrating Brad Pitt, I feel like, which is an insane thing to say about one of like two legit box office draw movie stars that we still have. I thought he was incredible in this movie to all the points that you talked about. It's very good, reserved Brad Pitt and reserved up until the exact points where it needs to not be reserved and then going for it.
He just yells. Oh, that there are times when he's just yelling, when like he has no other way to express his emotion besides just shouting because of whatever's happening.
Yeah.
And then it's just done.
Yep.
He has his emotion and then he did it and it's done. So why continue on? It's like his character's kind of philosophy, right? There's a line earlier in the movie about compartmentalization, about how he's trained to take his emotions and like set them aside for the mission or whatever. And you can really see him doing that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a sad movie, frankly. Yeah, it was a very sad movie.
And for how much of it is that like it is a Brad Pitt point of view movie. He is in literally almost every single scene of this film. Every other character exists to be something in relation to his character. As we get later into some nits that I have with the movie, I think that
yes,
that might be part of that. Something that at least would come up from my side. I think it is the kind of thing similar to Moneyball where there's a version of this movie that I think could be perfectly fine with a lesser actor at its helm. There's a version of this movie that'd be atrocious with a much worse actor at its helm. But like for as much as you can lay the skill, I think in Moneyball, in the case of like the script and from Aaron Sorkin, in this, and I think in the direction from James Gray, a huge ton of it has to be given to Brad Pitt for being able to carry through this movie and carry the weight of that reservedness and explosions when it needs to happen.
Yeah. I guess you want to talk about, I guess, what the plot of the film is.
Cool. So, Ad Astra, I'm trying to think of what's the right way to describe it, spoiler free. But it's a movie that is set in the near future, in a world where we have limited space travel. We have bases on the moon. We have bases on Mars, and we've done some explorations to try and go further than that, but that's really all we're at right now. Brad Pitt is an astronaut, a very celebrated astronaut and son of a celebrated astronaut. And there are these mysterious electronic pulses that keep coming towards Earth and damaging all of our electrical equipment. And Brad Pitt gets recruited
almost
into a mission.
So.
Oh, sorry. Say that again.
Yeah. Like almost cataclysmically. So like from the very get go, like thousands of people died in the first, like, this is spoilery. I don't know.
No, I think it's fine. No, it's fine. It's in the first couple minutes of the movie. And I think it's in the trailer.
There's like an EMP that killed like 5,000 people or something right from the get go. And that like blanketed the whole entire Earth. And like the whole point of the movie is to figure out is to try and figure out where it's coming from, why they're happening, and to stop it.
Yep. And, kind of. And slight, I don't think it's a, I think this is in the trailer, but spoiler alert, there's a reason a lot of people on Twitter are making Dad Astor jokes. Remember when I mentioned that he was the son of a famous astronaut? That comes very much into play in the movie, in terms of both his own characterization and the plot. But I think that's all I will say for now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think unabashed, we recommend. Good movie. Go see it if you like A-Dub Club shit.
Yeah, it's for so many reasons of like, I can never distill this phrase, but the thing that I like the most about sci-fi isn't the space and the lasers, which even though those are really fucking awesome, it's about how it asks the what if question of how it is a vehicle for something else. Mm. Sci-fi is a vehicle for human emotion and for human, real human connections. Like any good story is, you know, and the story of this is about, you know, loneliness and being alone. And space is a perfect vehicle for that.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Go see this movie. With that, I think we're going to get into full on spoiler territory from this point on. And here we go. Snape kills Dumbledore.
Oh, shit.
Don't say you aren't warned. But yeah, so Ad Astra. Ad Astra is, it's a movie. It's a good movie that I liked that is about space and dads.
Yeah. So the dad of Brad Pitt, he's like a celebrated astronaut. He's like Tommy Lee Jones, amazing actor. He is in this like the astronaut, like Neil Armstrong, basically.
In fact, literally, I think there's a scene where they're panning through a wall of like plaques at NASA headquarters, and the first one the first one on the wall is Neil Armstrong. The second one is Clifford McBride, I believe is his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Roy McBride is the name of Brad Pitt's character.
Yeah. And he's going out to Jupiter? Neptune to have a station out there to search for alien life.
Yep. The he in this case being Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. And that happened like 30 years ago. And then like 20 years ago, they lost contact and never continued, I guess. Mm-hmm. Really was, it's kind of unclear. Yep.
Yeah, so they lost contact and everyone was presumed dead, then they said, all right, that's too far out, we can't do this anymore, we're gonna stick to Mars at the furthest. And then after these surges start happening, this is very much been in the trailer, but like the opening scene of the movie is phenomenal, and I think is a really, really great lead into it. Brad Pitt is doing a spacewalk on a like space elevator, which one, that's cool. We have space elevators in a movie. Yep. Neat. He's doing a spacewalk, and then one of these pulses happens and that blows up the thing, and he falls from space to Earth. The implication is that part of the reason he's able to survive is that he is so cool and calm under pressure, to an almost terrifying degree, that he can like keep himself calm, keep himself awake, get him to be able to like stop spinning and losing consciousness from the G forces, and then is able to activate his parachute and lands and survives. But oh my God, it's such a like unbelievably tense action scene.
Yeah. That scene was surprising for me because it started off with Brad Pitt doing like he was doing a psych eval and he was talking about himself and his emotions and how like, I rely on no one. He didn't say I'm flawless, but like, I am not prone to error. I keep calm. This is what I do. And it seemed like a very heady start to the movie because that's what the movie's about. It's about him being alone. Right. And then it got straight into this action scene, which I thought was fantastic, but I was immediately worried from the get-go that it was going to be like Sandra Bullock in Gravity, Gravity was a great movie, but it was a spectacle is all it
Gravity
was.
Is much more a pure action movie, a beautiful pure action movie, but a pure action movie.
Fantastic. Love it.
Yeah.
But not
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think as well, we can get to, I mean, we can jump around, but throughout the rest of the movie, I think it, and apparently this is a thing that James Gray is pretty good at. I've never seen any of his other movies. I think it does a good job of blending the headiness, blending the emotion, blending the like quote unquote higher story with the action scenes in ways that don't feel disjointed. It's not a movie that's all right, now we're going to have our big, like, talk to the camera and be super metaphysical about everything scenes and then jarringly cut into an action scene. They're actually pretty well blended together.
Yeah.
And they all feel as a whole. I think the other action standout, at least for me, is the like rover chase on the moon. I think for me, those two are the, yes, this is, I'm loving this.
That one was cool,
but yeah. So we have, and then we have that, that through line or that narrative device of doing the psych evals is also a through line that goes out through the whole rest of the movie. Is he's constantly doing these psych evals, and Chekhov's psych eval, I guess, like eventually gets to the point where he is not able to pass these psychological evaluations and keep, you know, terrifyingly at under 80 beats per minute, even in like deeply stressful situations. I mean, I guess that was one of those, like, okay, especially once we got to the second psyche eval, I was like, yes, I know exactly that at some point in this movie, he's going to take one of these psyche evals and it's going to go off and he's going to decide to, you know, have to break out of something or whatever, which is in fact the case. But man, it was still very, very well executed, even if you could see it coming.
There was my favorite. So the kind of the journey of the film is so. They bring him to Mars so that he can send a message to his dad, and them being the military. And then once they do that, they are going to go to destroy the base because that's the only way to stop these pulses happening, right?
And so the implication then that is revealed to him is that, like, hey, guess what? We actually think your dad's super alive. We're not sure about it, but he probably is. Yeah. And if he's alive, maybe he went crazy over these 30 years. And if he went crazy over these 30 years, maybe he's the one sending these. So could you just, like, talk to him and convince him to not try to keep killing us all with these electromagnetic pulses, please and thank you? Then when they're on Mars, this is jumping around a little bit, but we get to the scene where he is on Mars in the recording booth giving these actual messages. Again, another thing for me that was like, I can see where you're going with this and I know what's going to happen eventually. He does a couple versions of it with like the prepared statement they have written out for him that is very bland and very anodyne. And exactly. Then he improvs and he just says like, hey dad, I want to meet you again. He talks about some like personal memories, stuff like that. And then they say, yeah, sorry, we're going to take you off this purely because you're too emotionally attached to this, not because that was the one that actually got us a response. And now we're going to go and kill your dad.
Yeah. Which is exactly, you know, why they were going to do it. But that leads into my favorite act of the whole thing. So he's alone. He's like, he forces himself to be alone. Like he doesn't connect with people intentionally, throughout the entire like first two acts of the movie. Then the third act, so he steals away onto the ship that's getting sent out into space. And then honestly, that action scene was like kind of hokey in my mind, like, because they're trying to kill Brad Pitt now because he stowed away onto the ship.
Yeah. So to set up a little bit of context, so he has to go from the overall structure of the movie is like making your way eventually to Neptune. First, he has to go to the moon, goes to the moon on like Virgin Atlantic because now they do moon flights. That's a fun little scene.
Yeah.
Gets to the moon, has to go from onto the far side of the moon, which is where the army base is. In order to do that, they have to like go through the dark side in rovers and they get attacked by pirates, which is my favorite.
Base pirate?
Yeah, that's my favorite action scene, at least, of the movie, because I think it's gorgeous. And the way that it like shoots it at this, like it doesn't shoot it the same way you would shoot. It feels more like weightless and more on the moon. And I kind of need to rewatch it to see, like, if I'm remembering correctly, I think they use like more wide shots and longer takes and less frantic cross cutting is, I think, what they do. But it just like felt on the moon.
It's a very slow paced. It's a very slow paced action scene, which is interesting because it's like Yeah.
But then goes to Mars. In Going to Mars is on this ship, which I'm on the Wikipedia page, so I can see it's called the Cepheus. And meets up with this crew, of people that it seems like, they're just like, you know, bumbly scientists. They're, you know, sweethearts, but they're not cut out for all this like war shit that Brad Pitt apparently is good at. This is the one part that I think kind of fell more flat to me in the movie. They have a little like, the captain responds to a distress call. They go off and do sort of a little mini alien ripoff in that they go onto the abandoned ship. And then it turns out there's a baboon that is on the ship. That was a test subject that kills the pilot, and Brad Pitt, is able to kill.
So strange.
And then get to Mars, and then, yeah. That once we're on Mars, then it's that crew of people that Brad Pitt kills trying to stow away on the ship going to Neptune.
Yeah. But it's like he accidentally kills them, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was just a very weird scene. Like, they were bumbling idiots who were not thinking right. I don't know. It just, the fight scene just felt very awkward and clunky to me. Like, I felt like they died because they wanted Brad Pitt to be alone, which, you know, is fine. I'm fine with that, but they just didn't do it in a way that made sense.
I think that's definitely something that I've been thinking about after the movie, and also sort of struck a chord with me. And I don't know where I fully come down on it, in that I think part of it is like, this is a movie where everything is in relation to Brad Pitt, and it's, you know, this theoretically world ending cataclysm is the way to get Brad Pitt to have a reconciliation with his father. And this is, there's the one thing that I really loved about this little mini scene, is it kind of complicates there's the version of this movie in a less, I think, a less emotionally interesting version of this movie would have it be that they're all very well-trained fighters and they're trying to kill Brad Pitt, but he's better than them and kills them, and then goes there and then decides like they were just going to kill his dad, but he's the one that's able to bring him back from the brink and brings him back. And because of his heroism in basically treat them as another obstacle, the same way that you would anything else in this, the fact that they are just like kind of sweetheart innocents that are kind of bumbling. And then like, it's more, they cause their own deaths than, they cause their deaths, own deaths, but they cause their own deaths because Brad Pitt does something foolish and unnecessary. And like, especially then, spoilers, we get to the end, there isn't really anything to suggest that it needed to be Brad Pitt there in order to destroy the final. The only things that we benefit from Brad Pitt being there is that he gets to have selfishly like an emotional reconciliation with his dad and gets to like his own character progression. 100%. And then he also like is able to bring back some of his dad's research, which is that's the only like net positive for humanity that happens because of it, which I find kind of an interesting complication that I don't know if it's intentional or not, but I hope it is. And I feel like it could be, given how ponderous the rest of the movie is, ponderous in a good way, that, and especially given that immediately after they all die, he has his like literally says, I think, what have I done? That it kind of, I don't know, I kind of like the throwing into question the traditional hero's journey and saying, are you going on this hero's journey? Is the fact that you're putting yourself on this hero's journey a fundamentally selfish thing? And at least in this circumstance, it looks like kind of maybe.
Absolutely, it was. It was 100% a very selfish thing for him to do. Like, he went to go see his dad purely for his own sake and nothing else. But that third act for me was like, so it took him 87 days, I think, to go from Mars to Neptune. And during all this time, you know, he killed the other people. So he's all alone. And there's this sequence that he has this inner monologue throughout the entire movie. And there was one moment that I loved where you realize he's saying the inner monologue out loud now, but you're still hearing it as if it's like in his head. It was a really cool moment. And then he starts like seeing some stars in front of him, like inside the spaceship, but you can't really tell. So it's because like he's going crazy, right? Because he's alone. That's what happens when you're alone for 90 days.
It reminded me a lot of the Christopher Nolan movie that is, I think, much better than Inception, even though other people seem to disagree, Interstellar. Like trippiness of a lot of the stuff that's happening in the final act. I got definite Interstellar vibes. Well, frankly, from the entire movie. But from that moment in particular, it was like, oh yeah, this does kind of remind me of the last act of Interstellar in a really cool way.
It was a very interesting, because you start to realize he's going crazy and insane from being alone. And then he goes and he meets his dad, who has been alone for 30 years. And you can kind of see him realize what being alone is.
Yeah.
And how like, I am not my dad. This is unhealthy and bad for me to try to be this person who is, so singularly committed to like what he was saying, like, oh, we're gonna disprove science, is what his dad was saying. Talking about like finding extraterrestrial life, which like does not exist, apparently. It was a very sad scene, just whole third act of like him talking to his dad. It's like you could tell that he could see his dad was a broken man, this formerly great, like, pioneer, like the pioneer of space travel and exploration, you know?
Yeah. And you get then the twist to the twist. So one thing that we didn't mention was that on Mars, he meets with Ruth Negga's character, whose name I don't remember, Helen, it looks like, from the Wikipedia page, who's the like base commander on Mars. And then she reveals to him something that was hidden from him, but that was told to her, that there was a mutiny 30 years ago, when they're out at Neptune on Tommy Lee Jones's ship. Tommy Lee Jones then kills all the crew, both the ones that mutinied and the ones that didn't, which includes Ruth Negga's parents. And so that is like smack dab in the middle of the movie. The implication then is like, oh, holy shit, his dad's gone crazy. And that is also what motivates Brad Pitt to say, yep, it's gotta be me. I gotta be the one to do this. Again, selfishly, as we've talked about, but selfishly with this idea of like, all right, if it's my dad that killed all these people, it's got to be me that takes him out, or maybe can convince him to come back.
Yeah.
And then you get to the when you get to Neptune. And so the implication then is that, which is the same thing that the space cops, I forget what their name is, has been saying, is that he's the one that's causing these power surges because he's gone crazy and wants to like kill off Earth, or is vendetta at Earth.
Yeah.
And then you get there and it turns out, oh no, just like the mutiny happened and it like fucked up a piece of electrical equipment and like it's just randomly causing these things, and I have no control over it, and B, like, open questions whether it can't fix it or doesn't care enough to fix it, but like, no, all this stuff is just an accident. It has nothing to do with him maliciously trying to destroy Earth, in contrast to that sort of midpoint twist. Which I think, like, he's just a sad broken man. And I do think that was a thing that, like, I was already really, really liking this movie. That kind of tilted it towards, I fucking love this movie, on that realization. That's like, nah, it's like, yeah, no, it's just an accident. And he's, you know, harbors no ill will. He's just sort of a sad old crazy man that's like just obsesses his own thing. But like, once you blow up the ship, doesn't matter. He's not going to do anything about it. Whether he was there, whether he was on the ship or not when it blew up, whatever, it would have no impact. There's not going to be a big final fight scene at the end, which I 100% assumed we were building to.
Yes, I was so glad about that there wasn't, like, he said, hi, Dad. And it was just so matter of fact and like chill and just almost resigned to the fact of what was happening. And it wasn't like, you left me, Dad. His dad even was like, I didn't care about you. I didn't think about home once while I was here. And I left you and I abandoned you. And he's like, okay, but I still love you, Dad. And it was so chill. And like,
And then that shot that, like, this is my read, at least, of the movie, is that it's that shot where he touches his dad for the first time. That's the moment when the dad decides, okay, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
At least go with you outside of the ship, if not necessarily going back to Earth. But like, yeah, there was no, I 100% assumed, because that's what you've been trained for every other space action movie like this, but like there's going to be a big final fight. His dad's gone crazy. You're going to have to defeat him. And like that would be cathartic in and of itself, because literally like you're letting the father go and becoming your own person, and like you're literalizing it, which I love in other movies. Like it's a big part of the reason I love horror movies and slasher movies in particular, is that, oh, here we are. We're going to literalize, and you have to actually fight to the death with a symbol of whatever is the thing that's holding your character back. But in this one, they twist it and they turn it, and it's like, nope, you just got to blow up the thing. And then if you can get your dad back, that's great. Maybe you can't, but you can still learn something from it. And it was, yeah, beautiful and small.
Yeah, it was contained, which I feel like is the tagline of this movie almost.
And then, yeah, he gets his dad out of the Lemur Project ship. And then his dad is like, nope, I'm going to go like just descend into Neptune. You're going to have to cut me free. Let me go, son. So there we have, I guess, literalizing the metaphor of letting your dad go, in that he literally has to let him go into go float down to Neptune.
Yeah. And he goes back to connect with people, and his dad, who was so obsessed with finding something new and connecting outside of the people around us. Like the final scene of the movie is he's like alone in a coffee shop or a bar or something. And his ex-wife, I guess, honestly, I don't remember. She's like, go at the window, and he gives like his last psyche vow, where he's like, I will rely on the people around me, and I will share their burden as they share their burden with me. It's kind of a sweet like ending to it, because like he's choosing not to be alone anymore, which is a powerful message.
Yeah, and that psych eval is almost like word for word the inversion of the psych eval he does at the beginning of the movie, in the opening shot, which is like on the nose, but on the nose in a great and earned, because of how small and subtle the rest of the movie is for being a big bombastic space action movie.
It's a very simple movie. Like,
it
had its message, and it was clear.
So, okay. So in that vein, it had its message and clear. What is the message of the movie then? Or what do you think the message of the movie is?
Don't be alone. You can choose not to be alone.
That sounds good.
You don't have to be alone.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Let's see. What else do we want? Anything else that's on top of your mind? Because I got a couple more things that I want to talk about.
Yes. Okay. I've got several things. I want to start with the aesthetic. I feel like the whole movie had a very interesting like 90s aesthetic to it. Like,
interesting.
There were a lot of fluorescent lighting. It felt kind of like an office space a lot of the time.
Mm.
Outside of actual spaceships. It felt like there were times when it just reminded me of this 90s corporate feel, like the office space. And there was also, I don't know, just this general lack of modern bombastic colorations of things. Like every scene was usually only one or two gentle colors.
Yeah. I think I agree with that. I didn't think 90s necessarily. For me, it reminded me a little more of
like Her.
Sorry, what?
It reminded me of Her somewhat.
I've never seen Her. For me, it was reminding me a lot of like Christopher Nolan movies, both the Batman ones and like Your Inceptions, Your Interstellars, in like color palette and shooting style. Though I guess it was a shot on film. I actually don't know. I can't tell.
It was also so beautiful. Like, space is always so, so very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it just,
35 millimeter.
It's having that beauty of like, I think like you don't have to be alone. Like, sure, that is the I think what the tagline of the movie is or something, but, or the message, but that isn't to say that being alone doesn't have its moments.
Mm.
So when he is alone out in space, it's beautiful, and it takes your breath away. And you know, it's a good thing too sometimes.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So continuing on other things to talk about. So I'm curious what your opinion is. And this is another big part of the secret reason why I really wanted you specifically to see this movie, which is,
okay,
for me, this feels the most like the experience of reading Ender's Game the first time was to me. This, to me, feels the closest to like an Ender's Game movie that I think I've ever seen. I think some of it is definitely like aesthetic, like there's tangible things to that, in that like both of these are stories about like near future that has a lot of grounding in current day and current politics and current technology, but like leaps forward a few steps. Both are very focused on this idea of like inter-solar system travel, but not until the end of sequels, thinking about like going further beyond. Yeah. So like literally there's moon bases and Mars bases and things like space stations that float out in orbit.
Sure, yeah, it's a journey. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I do think it is a lot like Ender's Game, because it's, first off, it's a journey is the whole point of Ad Astra, and Ender's Game is also absolutely about like a character's journey and growth, and how they change. The only thing that I think is I was going to say the third act of both Ender's Game and Ad Astra are different, but
yeah,
they're not exact. So like the third act of Ender's Game is like him devolving into like almost like a frenzied obsession with what he's doing to like command the armies and to be forced into that. So much so that he starts mixing reality with dreams and doesn't know what he's doing and where he's at, because he's so solely dedicated to this one task, which is kind of like the journey he has, the 90 days to Neptune. But it's more about his own, the way that ends though for Brad Pitt is his own choice, and he is back into his own reality. Like Brad Pitt is making his own choices versus Ender is just like being broken.
Totally.
Like at the end of Ender's Game, he is utterly destroyed.
Yeah.
You know?
And so I think, I mean, so yeah, what I was saying or thinking is that there's like the tangible things that I think are like what made me think like put Ender's Game into my mind first. The deeper thing to me is more exactly the kind of stuff that you're talking about around like, these are both whiz bang action stories, but are really stories about like deeply emotionally traumatized people going through deep emotional trauma. And like,
yeah,
I guess it's the fact that like they look so glossy and actiony and are actiony, but are also so profoundly sad at the same time. That was sort of the thing that really drew me in. That plus then, the other than. So yeah, I don't. It's not that like this is actually like, oh, Ad Astra is secretly an Ender's Game movie, but it had like, the other than big thing that reminded me of it is in Ender's Game, it's all about like, okay, here's these aliens, and these aliens are coming, and they're this like outside force that we need to defeat, and you know, put all the resources toward defeating, and then in the end, it's and this is even more explored in the sequels. Oh, it was kind of just a big miscommunication, and like Ender committed genocide and like feels really bad about that. And you know, it complicates and deflates the like heroic narrative. And a similar thing happened, and a similar thing happens. And it's part of it. I think another reason why I reacted so strongly to that fact that the dad is not actually causing these electrical pulses other than by accident. I had a similar realization to that as I did that time at the end of Ender's Game, where Ender's like, oh wait, shit, Hive Queen, oh no, what have I done? It that same thing of like, we went on this big mission to try and stop something, but it turns out the thing that we were trying to stop was much smaller and less of a threat than we anticipated. But then at the same time, we still have to do something about it. So I think, yeah, that whole soup to me made me think, and again, I've never seen the actual Ender's Game movie, so I don't know. My guess is this is a lot better than that movie was.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I definitely had a lot of the same reactions to it that I did circa sixth grade reading Ender's Game for the first time.
Yeah, it's definitely a very similar story in terms of emotional content. it's all a very different ending for sure, emotionally, but it is absolutely, they are very in line with each other. Oh, wow. Yeah. Damn, I didn't think of it. That's cool.
Yeah, I think this movie is more of like, it's kind of a sad ending, but become in that like, oh, yes, let his dad go. And his dad didn't actually find alien life. And like, it was a waste for him, but becomes happy in the way that Brad Pitt reacts to it and learns a lesson from it. In Ender's Game, it's almost the opposite, where it's like a big triumphant happy ending, but then becomes a sad ending in how Ender reacts to that big triumphant happiness.
Yeah.
Orson Scott Card still a dick, though.
Piece of shit.
For as good as Ender's Game is. And again, we'll say it every time we talk about Ender's Game, but like, how can you be such a bigoted jerkbag when you literally wrote a book where the whole thing and whole series rests on the idea of empathy and empathy as like, if you don't have empathy for people that seem different from you, that will cause genocide and it'll be awful.
It's crazy. I cannot comprehend that.
So frustrating. This is also like... unrelated to anything Ad Astra, but related to Ender's Game, because I was like rereading the synopsis of it just to like get it all in my head, because I knew this was a talking point that I wanted to have today. Apparently, Ender's Game is has been required reading on most Marine, I think, like entry courses at like naval academies and things like that. They're like, yeah, we want officers to read Ender's Game because it's such a great like way to understand how we do military stuff, and that was. Amazing and also kind of depressing, but also amazing. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I hope you're learning the right. I hope you're learning the right lessons from this. Please tell me you're learning the right lessons from this one.
Yeah, I'm like, there could be some interesting lessons that you learn from that. Like, it's like, oh, blindly follow your leaders and cause genocide. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway,
yeah,
that's my galaxy brain take.
Let's get into some nitpicks we have with the film.
Totally. You hit it first, and I'll fill in.
I would say, so at the very beginning, I mentioned this. I felt like this movie came out 10 to 15 years ago because of just let's start with the wife. Like, I honestly, she. The first scene that she was in, it was like one of the first two or three scenes, frankly. I think it was during the psych eval, actually. It was like a clip too while he was monologuing over it.
Yeah.
She is blurry and you can't see her face, and she like set her keys down. And it was very, very, very much like, this is a character whose wife has left him, and that is her entire purpose. And at the end of the film, she comes back to him because he's back. And I get how that isn't what this movie is about. And she doesn't need to be this important figure who has lines in the movie. But it also is just like, okay, it's 2019 and this woman is literally a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so torn on that opening scene in particular, in that it is like, that scene and shot in and of itself is so fucking cool. Like, I loved it in the theater of like, oh, they're never going to they're never going to blur out of focus. And then as you watch the rest of the movie, it makes a ton of sense because like that like is literalizing through the use of the camera, the way that he is feeling and reacting to everyone else in his life is that they are always out of focus. Never drawing them in enough to like be able to literally like let the light reconjigger into a thing that works. It's that sort of thing that like, as with any of these issues around like representation and diversity, not any of them, but like a lot of them, especially ones where it's like just literally there is not enough screen presence and enough stuff being done.
Yeah.
It's not that any of the stuff individually is problematic because like you said, and in like we've been talking about, like this is a movie where everything exists purely in relation to Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And so if it purely happens in relation to Brad Pitt, that happened, like that is also true of a lot of the male characters, is that they only exist to be foils or extensions of a thing that he's dealing with. The downside of that though, is that like if every movie that you're doing that's like that all stars a white guy, and none of them star women or people of color, then what you're going to get is a lot of, like, shitty underwritten. It's not even that they're underwritten, but it's like there's, if we were in a world where half the half of the Ad Astras that get released star Brad Pitt and half the Ad Astras star star women or star people of color, or no, not half and half, but like if we had balance in that starring role level and then also had balance in the lower level characters, then it would be fine. But because we don't, that means that every movie like this where it's like, all right, individually it quote unquote makes sense for this movie,
yeah,
but that doesn't mean it's not part of a troublesome trend that especially economically leads to, like, you know,
women not getting paid,
people just not having as great roles.
Yeah.
I think that was also then true for, again, like Ruth Negga's character in the middle, is an absolute scene stealer. She's very, very good, I think, in the movie.
Yeah.
In even reading interviews with, I read an interview with James Gray today where he was talking a little bit about that character and how there, which pros and cons to this, I can kind of appreciate it, but it's also going to be kind of frustrating in Joseph Campbell's like story structure of the like Hero with a Thousand Faces quest narrative. That midpoint is called he calls it the meeting with the goddess. Is doing that like metaphorically to say, like, okay, in a traditional myth or something like that, this is where you would meet with this character who gives you this thing to like let you go forward. And he was like, I kind of liked the idea of literalizing that by like he's meeting with her at the point of the meeting with the goddess, which again makes sense and I kind of dig it from a formalist perspective, but sucks in when there aren't a lot of women in space movies and there aren't a lot of people of color in space movies, and there's not a lot of women in this movie particularly, and they get smaller roles, even though, again, it's a great scene. She's a scene stealer in it, and gets a lot to do when she is on screen. It's like, great, you're still only in there for three scenes of this movie, and then the rest of it is mostly Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
What are the nits?
Next nit is it felt a lot like a hard sci-fi movie. But then there were times where just the realism of space travel just kind of hit me hard, of like,
okay,
hit me wrong. So like, for example, he's blasting through the asteroid field from the station in Neptune to get back to his ship.
Yep.
And he runs into the ship and has to like grab onto a handhold, and like the amount of that's insane, like to be able to grab onto a ship and to not tear your suit just seems so weird and strange. The amount of fragility of space travel is not well showed in this movie.
Yeah.
There's also a scene where the ship's about to blast off and he just in time opens an airlock to sneak into the ship, and then types in a code to like close the airlock or whatever. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
No, you couldn't just open the side of a ship to get into an airlock while it's about to blast off. I'm sorry.
I'm actually going to disagree with you, because I believe that one, like, only because my read on that is that that was the thing that was set up where in the what's it called? The like, we're going to go fight the baboons, where he enters in the Mayday code. And so there's an implication that there's a universal Mayday code that will let you into any ship.
I disagree. I think that
then he's able to use that. My assumption is he's using that same Mayday code on the Cepheus that they used to get into the other ship.
A Mayday code, I am sure, would only work if the ship was giving off a Mayday signal. They would be sending out a Mayday signal code saying, hey, here's a code to get into the ship.
Interesting. Okay. I read it. The way that it was phrased in the movie made me think more like this was like there is some universal agreed upon for like ships that are in this political union Mayday code. But maybe I'm wrong on that. It is a held belief, but it's not a strongly held belief, I will say.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there are a lot of nits of like how space travel would actually work in the how dainty a spaceship is, he used a nuclear explosion in order to propel himself back home. And I'm like, okay, sure. I mean, I guess the integral structure of the ship might be strong enough to withhold that, possibly, maybe, but it just still seems kind of weird. that seems a bit insane. That seems like some crazy throw it against the wall shit. Like, we're gonna set off a nuke to get ourselves home, you know? Mm-hmm. Which just, it felt so jarring when the rest of the movie had, was just beautifully beautiful sci-fi wise. And this beauty and specificity with what everything looks like, I tend to associate with like harder sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
So when the hard sci-fi, it just took me out of it a bit. I was like, okay, I'm rolling my eyes now because Brad Pitt crashed into the ship and he bounced up and down and just barely grabbed on with his hand after he was careening towards it. It's like, okay, sure. Go Brad Pitt action movie.
All right. Fair enough. What are my nets? I wanted more Donald Sutherland. I thought he was out of the movie too soon.
Agreed.
Basically, I feel the same way that I do about Ruth Negga. It's like, I want more Ruth Negga. I want more Donald Sutherland. I didn't love the Natasha Lyonne cameo. As much as I love Natasha Lyonne all the time, and as much as I understand the point of it, which is like, we want to show that for these people out here out on Mars, it's just another day in the life. They're not thinking about like, you know, they aren't part of your story, which is kind of, or they are living a different story than you are, which in the mundanity of space travel and blah, blah, blah. I get it. It's just like, she is too much of a scene stealer, I think.
I'm just a regular old Joe tapping in. Put your palm there, sir. Whatever, you know, Natasha Lyonne shit.
Yeah,
she was just being Natasha Lyonne too, which is, again, great, fantastic, but not. She needed to be a blur in the background.
Yeah,
is kind of the whole point. I feel like that's kind of the whole point of Brad Pitt's life in that movie, is like, fuck everyone else. I barely care. Even when he killed those people, he was like kind of sad about it, mm-hmm. but. He gave some perfunctory, like, is what I'm doing right? And then forgot about it.
Yeah.
Like.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. What else? Didn't love the swimming through a lake thing, other than the idea of like, oh, yeah, I guess it's kind of cool that this would all, like, it's a spacesuit, so it would also be let you go through a lake. Okay, that's kind of neat. But I don't know. I thought it went on for a little longer than I needed to.
It was a beautiful scene.
It was a beautiful scene. I could have gone for more, less time in the lake and more time struggling to get onto the spaceship. That would have been how I would have balanced it.
Yes, absolutely.
In my head. And I love the ending up until the point, basically after he blasts off in the ship. I love the monologue at the end, but I don't love like the ending scene. And this is very nitpicky and very dumb. It's just like,
yep.
I wanted to have some consequences for killing three people. And like, and there, I can rationalize it. I can fully rationalize it by saying like, okay, we know we have textual proof that SpaceCom or whatever they're called has in the past covered up like murders of people when it doesn't fit their narrative. And in this case, their narrative would want to be that we have this, like the sun goes out and saves the day and like is able to, you know, or maybe they just want to hide it all under the rug regardless. So like I can justify it perfectly fine. But it was just in the back of my head and it's like, I don't love, it was just like, you're just sitting in a cafe and nothing and everything's fine. It's just like, I don't know about that.
You're sitting in a cafe getting back together with your ex-wife.
Yeah.
Because you're here now and you're present.
Yeah.
And like, I get that ending. It could have been told a different, like that was almost something that I really loved about the movie was its simplicity. That was almost too simple.
Yeah.
To be like back at a cafe getting back together with my wife. I'm not alone anymore because I choose not to be alone.
Yeah. And I also actually, maybe now that I'm thinking about it, wonder if part of the reason I'm feeling that way is that the choice to decide to try and go back when he could have just like stayed out there alone forever, that choice told me enough, as much as, again, I love the mirroring of the outro psyche vow and the intro psyche vow. I almost feel like I'm told everything I need to know about his character progression by the fact that he's decided to get onto the ship and go away. And fly back.
I don't know. That could have been the end. The end could have definitely just been Well, I guess having the actual connection of meeting other people. So like,
yeah,
there was the good mirror scene of him offering his hand to his dad and then his dad shying away.
Yeah.
And then when he's getting out of like the landing, whatever.
Shit. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good scene. I feel like that could have been the ending is it fades. I thought that was going to be the ending, honestly.
Yeah.
He was it kind of fades out of focus a little bit as he's walking away. And I feel like that would have been a perfect ending.
Yeah, yeah. Again, to talk about Interstellar, I kind of felt the same way about Interstellar. So like, oh, I kind of liked the ending up until like the last thing where he's walking around like future with future spaceship with future Murph after he wakes up from the coma. It's like, okay, it's fine. But, you know, could take it or leave it. Any other nits? Yeah. Those are mine.
I think that's it for me.
Any other thoughts on the 2019 film Ad Astra?
It was beautiful. It hit me. It's very interesting because I feel like this movie really in my life personally right now has hit me at like a good time to start understanding my own shit.
Interesting.
Good. Yeah.
Dive into that more if you're comfortable diving into that more, because I'm very curious.
Yeah, let's see how comfortable I am. Okay. We'll see. Okay. of just loneliness and how you choose to choose the people around you and to, you know, I don't know how much I want to say of this.
That's fair.
Yeah. Of how much for me, well, yeah, probably cut this out.
Cool.
Most of it for me is just like, I feel like I'm trying right now to be, I don't really realize how lonely I am sometimes.
Mm.
And this movie definitely was like, okay, I'm not choosing so directly to be as lonely as he is, but I'm also not. I don't think I've put as much effort towards not being lonely.
Yeah.
That I should, you know?
Wow.
Definitely cut that out. But yeah.
I mean, yes, I absolutely will cut that out if you want to cut that out. That being said, like, it's good tape. I'm just going to say it. But it's your call. It's your call.
Let me think about it.
Okay. Ponder. We'll see how it goes.
I thought it was going to go in a different direction. So
sure.
It didn't. So probably keep it in. Listen to it again. Yeah. And then or you listen to it and you determine it. But I don't think that needs to be cut out. No.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause, in thinking about like the other movies that I've loved this year, there's some that are like, I love them because like I fucking loved Ready or Not, but of course, cause Ready or Not, it's exactly the kind of movie that I would love. It is a like flawlessly perfect rip roaring fun time at the movies kind of movie.
Yeah.
I felt kind of the same way about Avengers Endgame where it's just like, holy shit, they did that. I'm just in awe of the filmmaking of it all. And I'd probably throw like, and then there's movies that like had more of a like, I feel like I got some emotion, like to your point, the kind of, same kind of reaction of like, I got some emotional catharsis out of this, or it pushed me on a direction to start thinking about like, I think Midsommar, there's a reason why Midsommar is my number one movie of the year so far, is that it kind of does both, but like, that's a heavy fucking movie that makes you think a lot of things and feel a lot of feelings. Booksmart actually was also kind of like that, interestingly enough, more so than I would have expected. And this movie, I don't know, because I hearing you say that, I loved this movie. I don't know if I came away with any big personal emotional realization the way that I did for like Midsommar, for Booksmart. But I mean, maybe something along like a thing that definitely stuck with me is this idea of it's a hero's journey that kind of argues against hero's journeys as being like good for the rest of the world, other than like being like they're valuable for the character, but it's also a lot of effort that you have to go to in order to let one character be able to come into, and there is a body count to one character being able to self-actualize, which I found really interesting. But I think I leaned a little more on the like, it's incredibly good technical filmmaking, not just like technical, like good cinematography, good editing, good VFX, but like technically good screenwriting, technically good acting, that I think I leaned a little more on that than like it gave me some big grand personal realization, which is interesting. But I loved it. I fucking loved the movie. It was very good. Very good.
It was, I feel like I got to see it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Brad for Oscar.
Yeah. Honestly, like,
it's good. It's a good movie. You should go watch this movie, Ad Astra, because it's a fun movie that, that's, if you've listened to this fucking podcast, you probably already saw it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even having it spoiled doesn't even matter, honestly.
Yeah. And also, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
What?
I know. Anything else on?
I don't think so.
Ad Astra? Brad Astra?
Space. Dad Astra.
Dad Astra. You can have your own emotional reactions to The Void of Space by listening to other episodes of the Ada Club podcast, which you can do wherever you're listening to these right now, but also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify. You can also find our podcast at theadub.club. That's theadub.club. There you can also find our topics guide. Our topics guide is where you can go see a list of all the stuff we've talked about. If you click on one of those things on the list, you will be taken to the episodes whereon we talk about those things. So for this one, you will see things like Ad Astra, Ender's Game, where we've talked about it in a lot of different episodes, I don't know, like existential dread. You can also find us on Twitter at the AW Club. That's theawclub. You can email us at theawclub@gmail.com, theawclub@gmail.com, where we will read your emails on the air as long as they aren't like racist and terrible. I'm going to also throw this out one. I'm spraying this on Alex Wade. Let me know if you want to be a guest on this podcast, because I want to do a guest at some point.
Someday, yeah.
We reserve the right to be like, no, but like hit me up and we'll see what we can make work. And I believe that is it.
I think so. Ada Club out.
Ada Club out. This part I'm probably going to cut and or maybe put at the end, but it is always fun that, like, because I always start that off with the how are you doing, having to have that, like, to break the fiction of the show, we talk for usually at least half an hour, if not an hour before the thing, explicitly about, hey, how are you doing? So always trying to come up with, like, what is that thing that we're going to throw in there to, like, we haven't talked about in our 30-minute real conversation that can be pithy in two sentences.
Always fun something.
The real thing. We do. It's good improv. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway.